The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the AFB, their quarterly newsletter, Focus Fall News. From channel WHAS 11, a legally blind pilot flies Kentucky. From Mac Rumors, five new iOS 16.1 features. From 9 to 5 Mac, iPhone 15 USB-C port is coming. From the Wall Street Journal, Facebook warns about 400 malicious apps out to get your passwords. Let's get started. From AFB.org, the Blind Leaders Development Program was created in 2019 and produced its first graduating class in 2021. The program pairs fellows with mentors, both of which are blind or have vision loss, to give talented people leadership experiences that can improve their ability to rise to high-level positions in their careers. Since the beginning, the program has seen a steady increase in applicants, fellows, and mentors. The third cohort, which began in summer 2022, is the biggest yet, and seven fellows from the second cohort are now mentors in this new cohort. They had leadership experience, but maybe they just didn't feel confident about being mentors, says Neva Fairchild, who oversees the program. But because of this program, they had the confidence and additional skills they applied and were selected as mentors. We've also had a mentor from our first cohort come back in the third cohort because he feels his career has developed to a point where he can work with another fellow. I think the mentors are growing and learning too while they're helping others grow. The program's expansion is notable. According to Fairchild, the first cohort included 15 fellows and 15 mentors. The second included 18 fellows and matched mentors plus two additional mentors. And the third cohort is made up of 25 fellows and 25 mentors. Like previous cohorts, the current fellows will receive extensive training in leadership, networking, communication, and other key skills to advance in their careers to higher levels of authority and improve their effectiveness as leaders. The group will follow the Leadership Challenge curriculum, that's a hot link, attend twice monthly webinars, and receive guidance about what it takes to succeed from their mentors, who are already in leadership positions. They will also attend a leadership seminar at the 2023 AFB Leadership Conference. The program is the source of many of the opportunities to network with other successful people who are blind or have low vision. For example, the Centennial Cohort, the program's second, and the third cohort met in August for the Centennial Cohort's graduation. The graduation celebration held in Louisville, Kentucky, featured various activities in addition to the ceremony, including a tour of the American Printing House for the Blind, a longtime AFB partner. After the ceremony, the third cohort stayed in Louisville for 2 days of training. Although the program uses asynchronous learning, Fairchild notes that the return of in-person training in April 2022 and the AFB Leadership Conference in May created yet more networking opportunities. The Centennial cohort just blossomed during those activities, she says. They gelled as a group, taking on planning, programming, and logistical aspects of the conference. Fairchild adds that the cohort has maintained those connections organically outside the program, creating a monthly book club and helping those in the cohort who wanted to learn Braille, for example. That really excites me, she says. The program is inspiring them to take initiative, which is part of leadership. The AFB is creating an opportunity for more formal continued networking, too, developing an alumni association so all program participants can stay connected. They'll have access to current content that will help keep them growing, Fairchild says, and one of the attributes of a leader is that they are a lifelong learner. Donor Corner. Lifelong blindness advocate and her husband leave a lasting legacy. An $8 million planned gift from Lou and Noah Alonzo provides significant support for AFB's programs. Lulu, Lou Johnson Alonzo spent her entire adult life working with and advocating for people who are blind or have low vision. Since her husband Noah passed away in 2021, AFB has received nearly $7 million to date and is expecting $8 million total, thanks to a planned gift from their estate. A generous donation befitting the incredible work of Lou, who died in 2012. Lou was a determined advocate for appropriate teacher preparation in visual impairment and deafblindness. Because of her dedication, she was a recipient of AFB's Miguel Medal in 2008. Among many other honors, including being inducted into American Printing House for the Blind's Hall of Fame for Leaders and Legends of the Blindness Field in 2019. The generous endowment Lou and Noah left to AFB will make a meaningful difference in our work to create a world of no limits for people who are blind or have low vision. Planned giving represents the largest financial commitment most donors will ever make, says Meredith Gale, AFB's Chief Development Officer. We understand the significance of these gifts to your family's legacy, and we want to plan for and celebrate those gifts with you, just like we had the opportunity to do with the Alonzos. Lou and Noah's endowment has been earmarked to support students who participate in various AFB workforce inclusion programs, such as our Talent Lab and Blind Leaders Development Program, as well as for a new research fellowship in AFB's Public Policy and Research Institute for graduate students and young scientists. Additionally, AFB will establish a merit-based college scholarship fund in Lou and Noah Alonzo's names for high school students who are blind or have low vision who are seeking higher education. Born in 1925, Lou spent 50 years at Michigan State University, starting as a graduate assistant and through the years working as an assistant professor, associate professor, professor, and professor emeritus. She put her degree in audiology and speech sciences and education of the visually impaired and blind to good use, overseeing the teacher preparation program in visual impairment at MSU for 39 years. Later, she launched and coordinated the school's programs in deafblindness and orientation and mobility, O&M. Lou was tireless in her advocacy, working in many state and national efforts in the field. She was a trustee and consultant to the Blind Children's Fund, a major collaborator in the development of the Michigan Special Education Outcomes, Guide and Assessments, Visual Impairment, and a member of the National Executive Committee for the Development of the American Foundation for the Blind's Hand in Hand, It Can Be Done project materials. Lou also authored many scholarly writings, including the foreword to Foundations of Education, published by AFB in 2000. Gale welcomes those interested in considering a planned gift to work with AFB. We want to understand your intent and the legacy you wish to leave, she says. This allows AFB to plan appropriately for the necessary programmatic support to bring your hopes and dreams to fruition. And it also allows us to plan for a bright and balanced future of sustainability for our mission as a whole. Mind the gap. AFB report provides insights on educational challenges. Issues facing children who are blind or have low vision were amplified during COVID-19 and require action to improve education in the future. AFB has been studying the impact of COVID-19 on students who are blind or have low vision, their families, and educators since spring 2020, and released our third Access and Engagement Report in June 2022. All the reports are available in accessible format at AFB's Research on Education for Children with Visual Impairments during the COVID-19 Pandemic Hotlink. Access and Engagement 3 builds on the first two reports. AFB conducted the third study for a number of reasons, says Arielle Silverman, Ph.D., Director of Research. We wanted to capture people's experiences going back in person with schools reopening, but also get a full year's worth, and in some cases even 18 months, of reflection on the pandemic as a whole and how it impacted students overall during that time, she explains. The third study also differed from the first two because it was mostly qualitative, gathering information information through focus groups and interviews about people's experiences, instead of quantitative, survey-based research used in other studies. AFB has a lot of goals related to policy advocacy, Silverman says. We already had quantitative data showing that a lot of educational technology platforms were inaccessible. But to have a parent say my child cried every day because they couldn't access their class independently is really powerful. The study also included interviews with administrators of schools for the blind and some Spanish-speaking parents. AFB made a concerted effort to include Spanish-speaking parents, including hiring a bilingual research assistant who conducted a lot of the outreach and interviews. Among the key findings were that many digital platforms were not fully accessible or usable. Lack of reliable internet access was another barrier for some families. According to parents and educators, some subjects such as orientation and mobility, O&M, were difficult to teach online, and many students didn't have a chance to receive in-person services or skill-building experience, which meant lost learning opportunities. All of these factors led some parents to homeschool their children or enroll them in a school for the blind. Although it's good some parents recognize the gaps and the need to change their child's school placement, it just emphasizes how many kids are getting left behind in public schools, Silverman says. In addition, Spanish-speaking parents said most communications from school were only in English, making bilingual educators essential to their children's education. Overall, it's striking how it seems the pandemic amplified and highlighted inequities that were already present, Silverman says. These things are not going to go away after the pandemic. Virtual education platforms are still going to be heavily used. So educators, technology companies, and everyone else needs to figure out how to ensure that virtual learning is accessible in the future. The AFB research team is disseminating the report to state special education directors, presenting it at relevant conferences, and using the findings to provide comments to the U.S. Department of Education. The team also plans to publish resource toolkits for youth, families, teachers, and school administrators. Ariel Silverman, what does the world look like to you? We continue our series asking people who are blind or have low vision to share their employment journeys. Ariel Silverman, Ph.D., was appointed as AFB's Director of Research in April 2022, after being hired as a research specialist in September 2021. She earned a bachelor's degree in psychology and biology from Arizona State University, a doctorate degree in social psychology from University of Colorado at Boulder, and spent 2 years in a postdoctoral program at University of Washington. Early in her studies, she realized she wanted to understand the origins of prejudice and stereotyping of people with vision loss and other disabilities, and how it can be remediated. Dr. Silverman later established her own business, Disability Wisdom Consulting, which provided services such as research and analysis for clients, including AFB, as well as inclusion training for organizations. Her book, Just Human, The Quest for Disability Wisdom, Respect, and Inclusion, is available on Amazon and can be purchased in accessible digital versions from her Disability Wisdom website. There's a hot link for that. When did you first experience vision loss? I was born blind due to Leber congenital amaurosis. I attended a specialized preschool for blind children where I learned Braille, then went to public school. What surprises people about your life? I think people have an idea that if you have a disability, that you've been through adversity or that life has been a struggle. In many ways, I've been very privileged, especially when I think about the average American in terms of socioeconomic status and resources. But I don't think people should assume that because I'm blind, I had to overcome anything in my life. What do you wish more people understood about what it means to be blind or have low vision? Most of us just want to be treated like everyone else. Although people haven't discouraged me professionally, I've always had my fair share of people making assumptions about whether I need help. Recently, I was getting off an airplane and I had people try to grab the straps on my luggage without communicating verbally. If we need an accommodation or assistance, we'll ask for it. Have you ever been in a situation where people tried to put limits on your aspirations because of your vision loss? How did you have to advocate for yourself? It's been pretty rare. Although in graduate school I thought I might want to be a professor, so I worked as a teaching assistant. Some of the assignments teaching assistants got were really easy, and others were very difficult. They kept giving me all the easiest assignments, so I had to advocate for myself to get the more difficult assignments because I actually wanted to practice teaching. What would true inclusion look like to you? Ensuring that any information that's shared in a visual modality is shared in a second or third way. If someone posts a picture on Facebook, I want to know what's in the picture and why it's important to the person who posted it. I don't feel included unless people write a description, because the automated ones don't do a great job. Or if someone is giving a presentation and there's a graph on the slide, I'm not included unless the most important information is presented verbally. AFB News. Help AFB put every dollar into our programs. We publish Focus 4 times a year because we want our supporters to know about our latest programs and initiatives to create a world of no limits for people who are blind or have low vision. Every issue of Focus is available online with the same great content as the printed version, but every copy we don't have to send in the mail saves us money. At AFB, we want every dollar from our generous supporters like you to go toward our programs, such as research and employment initiatives. Plus, we care about protecting the environment, and fewer mailings does just that. Sign up at the hot link to receive Focus in your inbox instead of your mailbox. From channel WHAS11.com, we can do anything. Legally blind woman lands plane in Louisville, aims to break barriers. She and her co-pilot, who can see, flew from Arizona to Louisville with a few stops in between as part of Flight for Sight. Dateline, Louisville, Kentucky. Defying the odds, that's the one goal visually impaired woman-turned-pilot has had for years. Kaya Armstrong, K-A-I-Y-A, Armstrong, 21, is legally blind and landed at Bowman Field in Louisville Monday afternoon, proving that no obstacle is too great to overcome. She and her co-pilot, who can see, flew from Arizona to Louisville with a few stops in between as part of Flight for Sight, the first program of its kind with Arizona-based company Foundation for Blind Children. Armstrong was chosen from a competitive pool of contestants and went through intensive training for nearly a year. I told my mom, I have to do this. I have to prove to myself and to everybody else that if this is possible, we don't have limits, Armstrong said. We can do anything. Armstrong said at first her drive wasn't because she had a passion for piloting. It was because she wanted to break barriers by soaring to new heights. Although it was hard, Armstrong said she held on to what her mother taught her when she first started losing her vision at 14 years old. She was determined, she said. She wouldn't let me say that I couldn't do something just because I couldn't see to do it. So when we wanted to go out mini-golfing as a family, we all went, including me. As most people can imagine, it didn't turn out very well, but we had a lot of fun doing it. Co-pilot Tyler Sinclair said that although he trained Armstrong, he learned a valuable lesson in return. Now we see that there are no limits, only limits you put on yourself, he said. Spencer Churchill, Assistant Director of Transition and Itinerant Services with Foundation for Blind Children, said stories like hers makes his job worthwhile. To say, I flew a plane 2,500 miles across the country is something that nobody can ever take away from Kaya, he said. And it proves that vision loss is a diagnosis, not a disability. A diagnosis that has never defined Armstrong, she said, and it never will. If you have an impossible dream, don't say it's impossible, she said. It's just in the works. The world is going to try and put limits on what you can do. As a community, as anybody that is visually impaired or blind, it is our job and responsibility to push back on those limits. Armstrong will visit the Kentucky School for the Blind and the American Printing House for the Blind Tuesday. She'll finish her journey in Washington, D.C. Wednesday, where she'll stay for World Sight Day. This Day in History. Recap of important historical events that took place on that day. Contact reporter Bobby McSwine at bmcswine@whas11.com or on Facebook or Twitter. Make it easy to keep up to date with more stories like this. Download the WHAS 11 News app now for Apple or Android users. From MacRumors.com, five new features coming to your iPhone with iOS 16.1 later this month by SAMIFATHI, posted October 11th. In a few weeks, Apple will release iOS 16.1 for all compatible iPhones, marking the first major update to the iOS 16 operating system since its public release in September. With iOS 16.1, Apple is bringing several new changes, features, and bug fixes to iPhone users. We've highlighted five noteworthy changes below. iOS 16.1 is currently still in beta testing with developers and public beta testers. Live activities. With iOS 16.1, Apple is enabling live activities on the redesigned iOS 16 lock screen and on the dynamic island on the iPhone 14 Pro. Live activities are a new type of interactive notification that can dynamically display real-time information from apps without needing to open an app directly. Uber, for example, can display a live activities notification on the iOS 16 lock screen to show the estimated time of arrival of a car. Sports apps will also be able to utilize live activities to showcase game scores in real time. On the latest iPhone 14 Pro models, live activities are also integrated into the dynamic island, which allows users to see real-time information from apps as they use their phone. Live activities are also shown on the lock screen in always-on display mode. Once iOS 16.1 is released to the public, apps will begin to adopt support for live activities. A redesigned battery indicator. Over the summer, Apple added a battery percentage indicator to the status bar for iPhones with a notch. The initial version of the battery indicator included a battery icon that remained visually full regardless of the iPhone's actual charge. In iOS 16.1, Apple is changing the behavior of the battery icon to accurately reflect the iPhone's charge level when the percentage is shown. iOS 16.1 also expands the battery indicator to more devices, including the iPhone 12 mini and iPhone 13 mini. Apple Fitness Plus with just an iPhone. Starting with iOS 16.1, iPhone users will be able to subscribe and use Apple Fitness Plus without needing an Apple Watch. Fitness Plus is a subscription from Apple that provides a wide catalog of workout videos and programs with different trainers. At launch, an Apple Watch was needed to use Fitness Plus to display real-time metrics on the screen. Clean energy charging option. In iOS 16.1, Apple has added a new clean energy charging option that selectively charges the iPhone when lower carbon emission electricity is available, in an effort to provide a more green charging method. Apple says the iPhone will still reach a full charge before it's needed, based on a user's daily routine, and the feature can be toggled off if desired. Preload in-app content. iOS 16.1 adds a new toggle for apps downloaded from the App Store that can automatically run newly downloaded apps in the background to download content before you first launch them. The new toggle is meant to make it faster for users to begin using an app immediately after downloading without waiting for the in-app content to load. More. iOS 16.1 is the first major update to iOS 16, so as expected, several smaller but noteworthy changes and bug fixes are included in the update. From 9to5Mac.com, iPhone 15 USB-C port is essentially a lock, says Gurman, article by Ben Lovejoy. An iPhone 15 USB-C port in place of a Lightning one is essentially a lock, says Mark Gurman in his latest Power On newsletter. It has been widely speculated that Apple will choose the iPhone 15 to make the switch, a year ahead of it becoming mandatory for all smartphones sold within the European Union. But Gurman's statement is the strongest we've seen to date. Background. Apple has always gone its own way on iPhone connectors, something which has proven a benefit in the past. When the industry standard was micro USB, a unidirectional plug and port which was almost universally hated for being awkward to insert, Apple had the vastly better bidirectional Lightning port. However, the dreaded micro USB port has been superseded by USB-C, which is as easy to use as a Lightning port. Apple was an early adopter of this port in MacBooks, and most of its iPads have swapped out Lightning for USB-C. The Lightning connector in the iPhone is now something of an anomaly in the lineup. Many Apple owners would welcome being able to use USB-C chargers and cables for all their devices. Apple will also be effectively forced to make the switch to USB-C for its 2024 iPhone lineup, as that's the year in which it will become a legal requirement for all smartphones sold within the 27 countries of the EU. While it's theoretically possible that Apple could switch to the USB-C port only on European model iPhones, this would be an unnecessary complication, and it seems far likelier that it will make the change worldwide. iPhone 15 USB-C port. The legal requirement would kick in with the iPhone 16 in 2024, but there have been repeated reports that Apple plans to make the switch a year earlier in the iPhone 15. Analyst Ming-Chi Kuo said it back in May that supply chain research pointed to Apple making the switch from Lightning to USB-C in the second half of 2023. Bloomberg reported the same month that Apple was internally testing an iPhone design with a USB-C port, but said only that 2023 would be the earliest that the company would make the change. However, the paper's Mark Gurman goes further than this in his latest Power On newsletter. Apple has been preparing for this law. I think the company will even-handedly beat the due date with its most visible products. The iPhone 15 is essentially a lock to get USB-C in the fall of 2023, beating the mandate by a year. Other possibilities do remain. While the new law is clear, it does have a couple of workarounds. Apple could technically meet the requirement to allow iPhones to be charged via USB-C by including a USB-C Lightning adapter in the pack, but that doesn't seem likely. Some have also suggested that the Cupertino company might take the 2024 deadline as the time to jump to a fully portless iPhone, which can only be charged wirelessly. This would again comply with the law as it only applies to devices that support wired charging. But while most consumers would likely be happy with wireless charging and data transfer, there are still professionals who use the iPhone within their workflows and who want the fastest possible data transfers and charging. AirPods, Magic Mouse, Magic Keyboard, Magic Trackpad. As we noted, the requirement also applies to a wide range of other products, which, for Apple, would mean switching to USB-C charging for AirPods, Magic Mouse, Magic Keyboard, and Magic Trackpad. Gurman emphasizes that the law applies only to new devices, so Apple is free to continue to sell all existing Lightning-powered models for as long as it wishes. But as soon as it produces an updated model, the USB-C charging requirement kicks in. There's no knowing when Apple would choose to update its Mac input devices, so these could well transition into USB-C at a later date. There's a lot of imaging that accompanies the article, but most of it's not related. From Wall Street Journal at WSJ.com, Facebook warns users about 400 malicious apps that steal passwords. The social media company said it notified Apple and Google about the apps that were available through their respective app stores. Article by Joseph D'Avila, updated October 7th. Facebook identified about 400 malicious apps that were available in the Google or Apple app stores. Photo by Jenny Kane for Associated Press. Meta Platforms Incorporated said it has identified about 400 malicious apps that steal the login information of Facebook users. The apps were available through the app stores of Apple and Alphabet Google Play, Meta said Friday. The company said it informed Apple and Google about the malicious apps. Meta has also begun notifying users that may have had their accounts compromised. Well, I've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.